just want to start by welcoming Councillor Michael Savage. I think this is your first meeting here in this committee. Michael, you're very welcome. So we have apologies. We have Marie Ward and Eddie Curtis. And any other apologies?
And Adam Wilkinson.
Adam Wilkinson. Councillor Michael Carr. All right. We've got through the formalities. We'd like to remind members of this committee or council of their obligations under the council's code of conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interest that they have in any items of business before this committee today. If you have any such interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote.
Chair, I would declare an interest in item 7.
In item 7? Right. Thank you. I declare an interest in item 10. Item 10. Right. Right, that's declarations of interest. Number 3, the action sheet. You want to take that?
Yeah.
We go through that page by page. Page 1, page 2, and 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Are you any issues in that?
The only update to give the committee, you'll notice on page 6. That there were two items which the progress has been noted as subject to call-in. That's simply because the call-in period ended the day that the papers were uploaded, and just to tell the committee that we've now commenced those actions following the call-in period.
Do we want to propose them? Yeah.
Yeah.
But a proposal and a second for the action sheet. Propose. All right. Item 4, minutes of the Elected Members Development Working Group. Just noted to go through it for accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, and 4. Proposer and seconder for that. Proposed, Councillor Yuan. Councillor Han, the only member of that, so no proposing will do. Item 5, fair employment results, and Katrina, you're going to take that.
Chairman, thank you. Yes, this paper is before the committee tonight just to provide an update on the results of the Fair Employment Annual Monitoring Return. As the report says, the Council as an employer is required to submit a return to the Equality Commission for Northern Ireland on an annual basis. And with your report, members, you'll see that you have the copy of this year's annual return in full. At 2.2 of this report, we have set out the comparison just to give you some insight on a year-by-year basis, how we compare 2016 to 2017. So all of the information is contained in that report, and the detail is in the actual return, which has been appended to the report, Chairman. Since compiling this report, we've received notification also from the Equality Commission that the Council will be due to submit its first three-yearly annual return after January of next year. Other than that, Chairman, I have nothing else to add, but I'm very happy to take any questions or provide any clarification.
Thank you, Katrina. Councillor Warren?
Yeah, I'll propose the report. It's great to see the breakdown of figures, Katrina, and I know when we're looking across the district of the breakdown, I think it's 3-1 across the district from the two denominations, and going through the figures and the levers, the applicants and the staff and the council, but in and around at 4-1 each of them. Which is great to see. It's right bang on, so great work. And I propose it.
Propose it for the second for the report. Second, Councillor Watt. Item 6 is the alcohol bylaws, and Doreen, you're taking that.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Members, you'll note that both of the legacy councils had alcohol bylaws in place, and we are now moving to review these and reissue bylaws in the name of the new council. Both of the legacy councils had somewhat different practices in place as to how they approached enforcing the bylaws, and they're laid out here at 1.6 and 1.7. So council now wishes to decide upon a uniform approach to be adopted by the Newry, Mourne and Down Council going forward. Recommendation is at section 3 that the council adopts a uniform zero tolerance policy in relation to the breaches of the bylaws. So happy to take any questions, members.
I'll happily propose, but I mean, it's good that we have this. But how enforceable are they? I mean, the thing is, I regularly be at Bloody Bridge, for example, which is a council regulated gateway to the Moorings, and it's quite trivial. The amount of alcohol consumed up there is phenomenal. I mean, during the day, all sorts. I mean, it wouldn't be unknown to be going up there to see walking past families away to an idyllic swim hole, only to know for a fact that there's another family up there with a 16 pack of Bud or whatever it is. So I'm just wondering how do we go about enforcing this? And certainly after the weekend, I mean, jeepers, oh, it's chronic. I mean, it really is. It's depressingly chronic. The glass, the tins, everything.
Councils are dependent upon notification by the PSNI, and it's on the seat of that detection and notification by the PSNI that we then invoke proceedings. I suppose the very fact that we're putting forward a zero tolerance policy is mindful of those tourism spots that you talk about, so that's why we're adopting that policy. But in terms of the approach, we are somewhat dependent upon the PSNI notifying us before we can take action.
Councillor Bourne.
I'd be happy to second, but seeing that the legacy councils, there were two different ways of implementing this policy, where the Newry and Mourne Council had a warning letter sent out first before starting legal proceedings, and I know Down it was just straight on the legal proceedings. I'd like to see us down the route of, right across the district, of at least issuing a warning letter first before going down the legal proceedings, because I think even some of these scenarios where it could be people's first time, peer pressure, young people, to go straight into the court proceedings straight away, I'd rather see a warning letter. So if we can keep along the lines of the Newry and Mourne Legacy Council, I'd be happy to second it, if that's an option.
Mr. Walker.
Chair, also to say that I would support the bylaws. In the past, what we've found in towns and villages was, and this was a problem, that certain areas within towns and villages were designated no drinking areas. And you could maybe walk 100 yards to another street or another alleyway which wasn't designated, and the unfortunate thing was the PSNI couldn't really act on it. Now, if we're, say, for example, going to designate and down the bylaws to lay, is it all the existing areas that we already have, or will there be room for to add to that if someone comes forward from an area to say that what I would like that included as an old drinking area, and that because in the old council, and I'm sure Newry and Mourne was the same, there were certain areas where they could stand 100 yards on down and laugh at the PSNI, providing them over 18. That was. So is there any, I know that there was a mechanism in the old council where you could apply for to have that area designated, and it was through the proper process.
Where we are running council run events, etc., we will have a designation, so that still is possible. Thanks, yeah.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a couple of things on it. The lack of PSNI in our towns these days, from not having community officers and stuff there, and it's becoming a regular sight again, where we had sort of got a hold of the on-street drinking. You're starting to see it become a regular sight again because we don't have officers on patrol. But we do have CCTV in most of our main towns. And is there not a way we can use the CCTV to gather evidence on this drinking? Or do we have to rely on the police providing a report? And the other item then was, talk about a fee here of around £100. The actual fine itself, does that come to the council? So the fee has been offset by the actual fine itself.
Yeah, so on your first point, the PSNI have to invoke the proceedings. It's not something that we could do with our own CCTV. It has to come from the PSNI in the first instance. With regard, the £100 is our approximate cost to the council of pursuing the action. It's up to then the court to decide on the level of penalty imposed, up to a maximum of £500, and that does come into the council then at that point. But how much up to the £500 is decided by the court?
Yeah, but I think it's important that we push the PSNI that they have to be proactive on this matter, for it is something that, particularly during the day, you see it where young people are running about the streets with their bottles of Buckfast. So it's just not a very good example to be setting to tourists, trying to attract tourists into the area. So, thank you.
Councillor Ryan.
Sure. I'd agree, we can put all the laws in place that we want it, how they're implemented is the problem that people have out there. And I also would share the same thoughts as Councillor Warren in relation to, I think a letter should be issued in the first instance, because you don't want a 16, 17, 18 year old get a criminal record before they actually start out in life. The other thing I would have a concern about is, more you see more and more now is bars, restaurants, cafes who have bar licenses who sit seats, tables outside their premises, and would this impact on them? And I think that we were looking at some sort of a proposal that would allow for that sort of type of calf style. So is that the impact on it?
No, that's covered by different licensing arrangements.
Right, that's
fair enough. So
yes, so just to recap, the recommendation that had come before the committee was to adopt a uniform zero tolerance policy instigating legal proceedings when informed of a breach. Now, Councillor Byrne has proposed that a warning letter be issued first, and Councillor Ryan seconded that.
Councillor Savage.
Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to fill in the line that I think if we are going to take the approach of sending letters or going down the route of zero tolerance, but we have to have a communications program in advance, because we're coming off the back of a period of time between the two councils merging, whereby there has been a slide in enforcement and there has been a slide on education out there that you can't drink on the streets. I was out at the weekend doing a major clean up with other councillors in the Lindsay Hill area of Newry, and 90% of the rubble and the rubbish that we lifted at the weekend were broken bottles, alcohol bottles. So it's an epidemic across all the towns and cities, but I think really the two elements of it should be a marketing campaign to educate the young people and those involved in this that they are breaking the law, and either we take the zero tolerance approach or that they have a warning letter and that they could have a big impact on their future.
I think it's only about 10 cases. We have a proposal in a second to go to include.
You can
attend the back, and it's agreed that he. All right. We don't have to go to vote now, that's agreed. All right. Thank you. Item 7, National Association of Councils Membership, and Liam, you're taking this.
Yes, Chairman, this is. We have 8 councillors who sit on the National Association of Councillors. One of them councillors now has been voted on to the NIASC UK executive, of which there is roughly 4 meetings per year. And again, it's agreed to pay. It's been traditional that councillor is paid for expenses for attending them 4 meetings. So the recommendation, Chairman, is to agree to pay Councillor Burgess to attend approximately 4 meetings per year of the UK National Executive.
Chair. Thank you, Councillor Walker.
Chair, I would like to make that a formal proposal that we send Councillor Burgess.
You're proposing that. Have you seconded for that? You're seconding that, Councillor Ryan. All right, thank you. Ian, you're also taking item 8, recording of planning committee meetings.
Yeah, Chairman, this is a report
following up from a couple of discussions we've had regarding the recording of planning committee meetings. I know I spoke to the members of the planning committee yesterday on this. We've come together with three options to agree to record the meetings of the planning committee and publish them on the council's website for a 2-year period, retaining them then for a total of 6 years at council offices. 2, to agree to record the meetings of the planning committee and retain them at the council for 6 years, providing copies to the public on request and potentially looking at a fee. And the 3rd is to agree to exempt the planning committee from audio recording and continue. I draw members' attention to paras 2.4 and 2.5 in relation to issues that they may need to consider in that regard. First of all is the issue in terms that, you know, we need to make people aware that these are quasi-judicial meetings, that if they're recorded then that they can be used, that evidence given by also by them and by members of the public and stuff that can be used at a later date. Also the other issue in terms of defamatory remarks, the council retain the right to remove defamatory remarks or remarks that they consider defamatory because the council could be found liable for publishing any defamatory remarks. However, that doesn't exclude the councillor who, or the member of the public or the agent who makes the defamatory remarks, because these will be full unredacted copies will be retained and could be asked for an evidence in terms of any defamation case. And again, really sort of saying is there's a number of practicalities around this, and we're suggesting that if members make this decision, that we don't implement it in January to give us a bit of time. First of all, get the message out for agents and members of the public that, you know, if they're given evidence, it will be recorded and retained and could be used in an appeal or a JR or any judicial process going forward. So again, the members have three options there. One is said to publish it and put it on the website and make it public as soon as practical after the meeting. Second thing is to hold it and hold it back. And again, we would look at actually charging a fee, particularly for lawyers or people that wish to take them forward, take it forward. And the third is that we stick to our current policy, which is basically not recording the meetings and exercising the practice that's currently in place.
That's our offer.
Chair, I'm going to make a proposal that we go with option 3. We maintain the status quo as it is at the minute, because I have serious concerns, just as the Chief Executive has said, in relation to JRs, whatever, you know, or if it was going to plan appeals or whatever. And I think also the council will then be bogged down in having to get this information for planning appeals or whatever. But I'm also concerned in relation to someone making a presentation to the planning committee where they're coming forward with sensitive information, and in that they're reluctant to let that go out into the public domain, but they have to because they're trying to get the planning application through. They go into that particular committee and give that evidence. Could it be medical or whatever, or anything to do with family breakdowns or whatever when it comes to a planning application? So I'm very, very concerned at this. I think it's working well the way it is at the minute. So I'm making a proposal that we agree on option 3.
Option 3, you're opposing. Councillor Morgan, go ahead.
Thanks very much. And let me just address a couple of things that Councillor Walker has put to us before against it. It's a two-way street with regard to JRs. You know, whilst it may give additional information for the person taking the JR, it also offers us protection that we will know exactly what we said and we'll know exactly what the applicant or the objector has said on the particular day. You look at 6 months later, and a fancy barrister is standing across the table from you telling you what you said, and you don't have a full recollection of that, or it's maybe the context he's taking it in. You may have said the actual word, but in the context of the meeting, it didn't have the same meaning, where a recording will give us a full context of everything that's said. And to address the concerns with regard to members of the public and what they state at the Planning Committee. Just to remind you, Planning Committee meetings are open to the public. Any member of the public can come and sit in a meeting. If someone is going to give us information of a medical nature or whatever, we go into closed session, and these closed sessions will not be recorded. So there isn't an issue on that. The Council, some months ago, took the time to bring in Stuart Beattie, QC, one of the top, if not the top, barrister in Northern Ireland on planning affairs. And his advice to us was to record our committee meetings. He was very clear about that. He actually stated, he says, you can be sure that someone sitting at the back of the room will be recording the committee meeting. So, you know, that's... If we're going to bring a QC in, do we pick and choose what advice we take from them? I think we shouldn't. There may actually be benefits to us in recording the meetings. You know, in fairness, if we look at some of the representations that come to us, they should never have been there. And if people are seeing that what they're going to be saying is going to be recorded, they may think twice about actually coming to the committee. So, you know, I think there's benefits to it. The issue over charging for getting information, I think the decision we need to make tonight is not option 1, 2, or 3. It's either between option 1 and 2. I'd be favouring that we go for option 2 and have a charge for it. If someone wants to, under the data protection, look at CCTV images we produce, they have to charge and pay for them to get those images. So I don't think it would be an issue about us charging to be able to get them a recording, because you'd only be able to give them the section of recording that relates to themselves. So I'd be looking to make a counter proposal that we go for option 2. Thank you.
Well, the first proposal I have is from Councillor Walker to go with option 3. Are you seconding for that proposal? The second that proposal? We have a proposal. Huh?
Right, good. Right. I'll do the proposal. I'll take the proposal on this.
Councillor Morgan, you have made a proposal too. Have we a seconder for that? We have to take the first one first, right? Right, we take the proposal.
We can take it.
Thank you.
Councillor Bourne?
Make a few points before. I know we take one proposal at a time, and if it comes, there are second marks, but I just want to make a few points first on some of the comments that Willie has made. Yeah, I think we need to have something between the two. I can understand, you know, the fears of, you know, the sense of information that is in the planning committee, and also the fears of, you know, recording everything in the planning committee and having it uploaded onto the site like the full council. So I do think option 2 is the best route for transparency. Some of the points that I made on paragraphs that the Chief Executive has just pointed out there, I do feel as if the advice is all leaning in one way. You know, it's leaning on a negative, and I think it's unnecessarily negative. You know, some of the points are, you know, straightforward and shouldn't be there. If we're looking at the, you know, the cons in Section 51, the exempt information on Section 51 relates to the individuals or financial or business nature, you know, of individuals' information. If we're talking about having an operating protocol where we can redact information, that shouldn't be an issue. It's the same as Mark says, being into committee on certain issues if we're talking about, you know, health or, you know, finances of somebody that we don't want out there. If we have an operating protocol where we go over the recording, and we can redact it before putting it online, or as option 2 says, having it kept on file and an unredacted kept on file as well, that shouldn't be an issue. So, also it states the increase of likelihood of challenges to the council decisions. I'd welcome that. It's obviously not welcoming more challenges to council decisions, but it means decisions are made properly, and, you know, there's more scrutiny in the decision-making process. You know, it nearly goes as far as actually states in it that reports will need to be thorough in their presentations. I would hope that reports are thorough anyhow. You know, and it does state that should be the case anyhow, so I don't even think that's an issue. You know, if you've got thorough reports and you know, the council decisions, I sat in a number of planning meetings, and, you know, the council decisions, as I can see them, can't be faulted. So if it's making people do a better job, you know, I really think that we should be recording it. Or used as evidence to examine complaints of members in the code of conduct. That's right across the board. Any committee, we can do that. You know, we passed in April this year to record the other committees and upload them online. And I know from getting clarification from Democratic Services that they will be uploaded online. They haven't been done since the motion, but they will be uploaded online. I'm sure that them recordings will be scrutinised as well before putting online for any, examine any possible complaints for our members' code of conduct. I can talk, you know, I don't want to take out examples, but if we go back to the ERT committee there, I'd like to hear the recording that went up online to see if that's actually the case. So if we had an operating protocol for that in place, I can't see it being an issue. Recordings need to be reviewed before the publication to ensure exempt defamatory material is not published. Absolutely. And that's what the operating protocol should say. So we shouldn't, just because it's trickier to record planning committees compared to the other statutory committees. If it's trickier, then we put in some, we put in certain things that we have the ability to redact. We have the ability, we don't put them online, they're kept in council offices and they'd be called on if needed. And just on the point that Mark had said, I was on the receiving end when I first came into the council in 3 months of making a representation on the planning committee and being misquoted. And it continued for a number of months. And I couldn't correct that because the minutes didn't have the details of it and there was no recording of it. And it was the way, the context and a sentence and the way it was taken up. And the only way that that would have been cleared up is if there was a recording of it. You know, so I do think it helps us as well. I do think we need to be able to protect some of the information and the exempt information, but we can do that with an operating protocol. It's not too hard. And if we're looking to be open and transparent, anybody can walk into a meeting of the planning committee. Public can walk in and sit down. So I don't see why we should have, shouldn't have it recorded. So if it comes to that, I'll second option two. But I know we'd take them one at a time. Or second Mark's proposal.
And do you want in?
I mean, well, I'm not sure what the form is, how this works, but I mean, my thing is your back proposal one. I think it's actually a question of whether we have recordings and open or whether we don't. I think having recordings for a fee doesn't sort of sit well with sort of all aspects of transparency, so to speak. And I think having transparency is a good ideal to have, and it's a good policy to have, it's a good procedure to have, it's a good practice to have. And I don't think we really should put in policies or practices that we're worried about defamation. You know, I mean, I just that argument, the defamation, I mean, I don't really see as a strong argument. But the gist of our views is, as Vern and Martin have pointed out, it'll give us more clout maybe in certain regards. So I would actually back option one over option two.
Right. And I'm going to take Liam in a minute here, and then I'm going to Councillor Walker's proposal.
No, just to clarify the point, I don't want members getting the wrong impression. We need to look, can we charge a fee? I'm not too sure whether we can charge a fee, because we need to go through to the Information Commissioner, because if it's kept as a public record, we may need to make it available free. So I just don't want members thinking that there will be a fee for it. We need to check that out.
Fair enough. Councillor Ryan. I'm going to Councillor Walker's proposal. I have a proposal in a second for option three.
I just wanted to say that if Andrew needed a seconder, I'd be up for seconding him. I really think that the maximum transparency is best for these sorts of things. It would probably bring the best form of conduct and governance.
All right, those in favour of option three, Councillor Walker's proposal. A second by Councillor Ryan. And against?
Can I just clarify, Councillor Murnan? I know you were in favour of recording, but is it option one or option two?
Option two.
Option two?
Yeah.
Do you agree with recording? So, again, that's seconded by Councillor Byrne.
So, those in favour of option two, Councillor Moore's proposal.
Yeah, so I just clarify. Option. Oh, apologies. Okay. So, there are two options with regards to recording the minutes. Option one being to agree to record the meetings of the Planning Committee and publish them on the Council's website for a 2-year period, retaining them for a total of 6 years. Option two is to agree to record the meetings of the Planning Committee, retain them at the Council's offices for a period of 6 years, providing copies to the public on request and potentially for a fee. So option one is uploading them on the website. Once recorded, option two, retaining them at Council's offices and making them available on request. So, and Councillor three then was to stay as is and not record, and that's what we've just voted on and has been defeated.
All right.
Okay, so Councillor Murray, you're proposing option two.
Right.
Seconded by Councillor Byrne.
Those in favour of option two.
One, two, three, four.
Five.
And those against?
So those in favour of option one,
which is to record the meetings of the Planning Committee, publish them on the Council's website for a 2-year period, retaining them for a total of 6 years at Council's offices. And those against?
Those against.
Against? Fine. Casting vote with the chair?
Against.
Against?
All
options are defeated then? All options are defeated with the chair?
Right, item 9, assessment of performance, and Johnny, you're going to take that. You're going to come forward and take that.
Right. Just go
to the full time. Yeah. Go ahead, Johnny, yeah.
Okay, Chairman, thanks very much. Members, you have quite a media report in your reports pack, so what I'll do is just pick up the key issues. In terms of the decisions required, I'm looking for this committee to recommend the adoption of the report, but also to grant approval to publish this assessment on the Council's website by the end of September, which will allow us to meet our statutory timetable, which is set by the Department. In terms of some background, Chair, we have a statutory requirement to carry out an assessment of our performance against the previous year, and indeed publish and put that into the public domain. So it will consider our performance against a number of key areas. Last year's performance improvement plan, which would have been agreed by the Council. Last year's performance around our statutory key performance indicators, such as economic development, planning and waste. our performance against any self-imposed indicators and standards, such as those which are reflected in the corporate plan, and then where we are actually strengthening or securing additional arrangements around our duty to improve. It's maybe also worth noting, Chair, that this assessment will be independently assessed by the Northern Ireland Audit Office as part of their overall audit and assessment of our performance this year, which we hope to get a certificate of compliance later on in the calendar year. Chair, in considering the assessment, there's a couple of things I just wanted to pick up. I will accept that it's largely subjective, and I suppose what we are doing currently is really reporting against actions as opposed to the outcomes or any particular metrics. And I think that probably just reflects where we are as an organisation in terms of trying to better understand the legislation, the fact that there were limited arrangements in the predecessor councils, and also that we don't actually have a system to support the whole collection, analysis and reporting of performance information. What I would say are those are issues that we're looking to address within the community planning and performance team. And indeed, in terms of the additional use of metrics, we are looking to explore with our services and departments more robust indicators and indeed targets. What I would also say, Chair, in terms of future reporting arrangements, hopefully this is the first of many type reports that will come to this committee. So in addition to this annual assessment of performance, this committee will also be furnished with every 6 months a mid-year progress report against that year's performance improvement plan. So again, members can scrutinise and hold the organisation to account in that regard. We also supplement that with departments reporting their various business plans and indeed the indicators located in within to their respective committees. For example, members on the RTS committee would see the planning performance metrics on a monthly basis being reported to that committee. And then also the Northern Ireland Audit Office report, as again, is a key yardstick or benchmark as to how well or not we are performing in that regard. Chair, my recommendation is that you adopt this report and also grant us authority to publish it in the public domain by the 30th of September. Happy to take any comments or questions.
All right, thank you, Johnny. Councillor Vaughan.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I'll propose the report. Johnny, just a few things, and there is a lot of green faces on the report, and I think what you did say is objective, and how we all view it. As Chair of ERT, seeing the figures from NISRA, I believe, we got the figures on the tourism figures and overnight stays, that, you know, all the staff in that department have to be congratulated, because that really is a good success story, and rightfully has the wee green face beside it. Where it is a wee bit more subjective is when we're looking at the likes of improved health and wellbeing, and we're looking at the figures of nearly leisure centre and or the leisure centres in general, 1.4 million people going through the door. And I think, you know, if we take as Steve Gullion Councillor and as the Chair, as Councillor Herty is right, he's been lobbying for better infrastructure between the rural communities and connectivity between there and the health centres, we could get that figure up. So we're looking at, you know, we're getting 1.4 million people through the doors of the health centres, but largely rural communities are being cut off. On the regeneration of Dublin and rural areas, I don't think it's as straightforward as the 11 million awarded in the Rural Development Programme and just putting it, you know, forward and seeing it just like that, because I know a number of applications that, because strategies weren't complete and match funding couldn't be put aside or put against some projects, that a number of them in the rural basic services fell in the rural areas, that it's going to come back around for funding again in February or March. But because, you know, the council, we hadn't got all our ducks in a row and we couldn't get match funding for a number of them because they didn't fit into the sports strategy or whatever, and then strategies weren't complete. So, you know, to have, you know, look at this, the 11 million is awarded and we're going in the right direction there. I think the council could have been doing a lot better before that call opened for expressions of interest, or maybe it shouldn't have opened at that stage at all. I think it was cab before the horse. But yes, going through the rest of the report, I suppose if you take planning aside, it's a very good report. And you know, if you're looking at things like at least 2 MB of broadband, you know, I'd welcome the pilot scheme through the rural development on that and doing the heat map, which is actually going in the right direction. But things like improved road infrastructure on that is a bit broad, you know, on the report, but I'd welcome it and I'd like to propose it.
Right. Will you second or two accept the report? You second? Okay. So the report's accepted. All right. Okay. Right, moving to item 10. I'm just going to take in the committee. All right. This item is deemed to be accepted under paragraph 3 of 5 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act NI 2014, information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information. And the public may be resolution by exclusion during the item of business. So, right. We'll take these two items, item 10, proposed, the act to go into proposed and seconded.